tell me about this fascination with the written word and spoken word and where that emanated from.
Well, I was very lucky. I grew up with my normal, seeing people with their heads bent over books, my grandmother and my mother, and that was literally my normal. And I didn't have an aversion to books or school. And I realized when I was in school, I liked books and reading and writing beyond just the assignments handed to us.
From elementary school on?
I think so. And I sort of had a facility for, at least when I was a kid, writing poems. And, you know, we would have a lot of fun with that as kids. There are a lot of jokers in my classes, and that was just part of the fun. And I did have a while of sort of taking the poetry for granted because I'd write something, forget I wrote it, stumble upon it, and go, oh, yeah, I wrote that. And then over time, I became fiercely protective of and proud of the fact that I could write, and it became something that was part of my identity.
I mean, poetry, striking young and lasting a lifetime is a beautiful thing. It's rare today, even among my adult friends. I mean, how many of us set aside time to read poetry?
Yeah, it is unfortunate. People think it's sort of a luxury or that it's fluff. But my best friend in high school, his parents bought an ad in our yearbook, said something like, my grandfather cleared forest and tilled the land so that we could eat, so that my father could be a merchant, and he worked hard so that his son could study art, culture, and poetry, something like that. I believe that it's something to aspire to as opposed to sort of a fluffy thing on the side.
Yeah. Well, I have to go to a little bit of the fluff, though, because within your checkered glorious past, references to MTV and work there, how did that come about? I'm just curious.
That was great. I had a good friend. I was living in Manhattan, a good friend from college. We realized that while we were humanitarians and were not averse to working at yet another nonprofit organization, we realized that the flat salaries were limiting our ability to be humanitarians. And we both decided to go corporate in our next job hunt. And I ended up in the best of both worlds, a nonprofit inside of MTV, which, of course, is part of the huge CBS Viacom corporation. VH1 Save the Music, the program that gives free instruments to elementary school classes. There were four of us. I managed the Midwest. And then Arkansas was kicked into my territory. Our boss knew former Governor Huckabee. And I was on the phone most days during one spring while Huckabee was doing his one-man travel the back roads of Arkansas listening tour. And we were on the phone planning the arrival of this program in Arkansas. So it's a fun job. And when you're traveling, you're the guy bringing the instruments. They're happy to see you.
I'll bet.
A lot of fun.
So important, that program, because for so many kids, they never have a chance to pick up an instrument, and it changes lives. That was also inadvertently, or maybe planned, an entree into the world of politics, working with Mr. Huckabee, and then jumping ahead years to 08 and getting a chance to do some planning. I guess, really, that's an interesting transition, but makes a lot of sense into the Obama policy for the arts.
Sure. It's been actually two tracks. The art track is sort of, you know, it could probably reach its way back a few years and definitely has gotten stronger as I focused on writing and music. But the public policy thing was also happening. I was a student government guy. I was president of everything, student body president, Reynolds High School. And then a little bit later in life, a lot of public policy fellowships. It was sort of an unplanned thing. HUD Community Development Fellowship, Coro Public Policy Fellowship, North Carolina Institute of Political Leadership Fellowship.
Were you at the governor's school, too?
I was at governor's school. Okay. And we just had a great fundraising campaign for that. And so that sort of public life, that's been another track that has sort of evolved. And they actually go well together, better together than you might think. But it's kept life very interesting. And I did end up, much to my surprise, on the National Obama Arts Policy Committee during the 2008 presidential campaign. I don't know how they got my name. I was getting all these emails. Then I saw my name on the official letterhead. I thought, oh, good. And so then I joined in and I went to some meetings during inauguration week. Even wrote a nice travel essay called The Purple Tunnel of Doom. That's actually had a better title than that. But inauguration week was great. There was this whole scandal of lots of people plus lots of bigwigs did not get to the inauguration because they were stuck in a pedestrian tunnel that got too crowded.
That's
and there
right.
were no authorities to get them out.
So how are they doing in terms of the arts?
Those organizations I just mentioned related to the Obama National Arts Committee, they have kept on working hard. And I was just at an art summit in Raleigh on April 11th, and I was impressed by the number of North Carolina General Assembly members there talking about the arts, what motivated them to be art supporters. And it was great. There were about seven of them in the room, and I thought that's a perfect blend because all of us arts enthusiasts were there, and then the politicians were there, so it wasn't a chasm between us. And I thought, I hope this is being modeled on the national level, that that conversation is advancing that far, where we're in the same room.
But I mm-hmm. thought the underpinnings of the title of the Universal Solvent mm-hmm. was really interesting. Mm-hmm. That concept.
I love that concept. And speaking of tracks of interest in your life, when I was younger, science was my first love.
I wondered about that. That's a pretty heartfelt intro about the...
Yeah. Before I paid attention to the fact that writing was something to seize on and be proud of and that not everyone wanted to do it or could do it, I loved science. And science was my pleasure reading. Reading about the Manhattan Project when they were creating the atomic bomb and reading about Leeuwenhoek and Lavoisier and all those early guys in Western science. But the universal solvent, the mythical concept of a substance that can dissolve everything, you know, yes, they sort of look for that. But water is almost a universal solvent because it does dissolve almost everything, which is why it's so important for life and so many things that we do. And just the concept of solvent, solution, resolution. And by the time you go through that chain of words, you get to the general concept of resolution of life problems, not just dissolving something in water, but resolving a problem. And there's some interesting parallels and interplay between the literalness of an industrial or watery solvent and the figurativeness of solving a problem. You know, you clear your head, the rinse cycle in a washing machine dissolves dirt and gets rid of it. So there's a nice through line between the literal and the figurative. I like that.
The timing of the collection of poetry seems to coincide with, or at least years of thought behind, this kind of a transformational period in your own life, mm-hmm. a reflection and personal growth. I kind of want to go there with you. It's been on my mind recently because I just happened to have attended this concert with India Arie a couple nights ago. She confronted her biggest fear, which is mm-hmm. trying something new, fear of failure, fear of judgment, fear of being not liked and beyond that, and how hard it is. Mm-hmm. Talk about that period in your life and what kind of got those gears turning into this transformation.
Sure. It was an interesting thing. Several months ago, I was supposed to be focusing on my novel manuscript, and suddenly I just had this urge to gather up my old poems and some more recent poems and have a book. And of course, I wanted to write some new poems, but I didn't realize I was concerned that, oh my God, can I write some new ones? You know, so many of them just show up or turn up. I wasn't sure I could sit down and say, okay, come. I wasn't sure if that could happen. And it was nice. Some new poems did come out, and they were surprisingly a lot longer than my usual poems, which used to be 21 lines or shorter. Some of these go on for about 4 pages, and they really were sort of, as I refer to all my poems, messengers from the soul, telling me about myself and where I am now, but not just so personal and specific to me. There's a lot of transpersonal content, universal content, spiritual content. That's the main thing. And so I do look at them as messages from the soul, telling me what's going on with me at a deep level in case I don't know that already. And I sort of like that function of the poems. And, you know, a poem like Autonomous Complex, How Do I Stop Yesterday? Even if you don't know what autonomous means, it sort of screams, this is a poem about some internal process. And the first line is something like, today, at long last, I finally decommissioned my indwelling evil twin. And every now and then you write something and you're like, hey, I kind of like that myself, you know, and the repetition in that first line, all those adverbial phrases that at long last, finally, you know, let you know this person is full of relief that something is finally over. And that's what I think of when you ask your question about that sort of process is going on inside. And I think focusing on being a writer, focusing more internally, that's one thing poetry does for you. It gives you a good through line. It makes sure that you know yourself pretty well. And I think that's important. Whenever there's something crazy in the news, when a person shoots up their workplace or other bizarre behavior that we see, bizarre or entertaining behavior, I think poetry saves me from that.
That's interesting. The power of that, and I can certainly relate to that process of reaffirmation when you do get that poem out that is new, and you reconnect with that sensation of accomplishment or whatever you would deem that. Maybe read us one an early something from that output, that most recent output that wound up in the Universal Solvent that provided that balm for you, or at least that I'm putting words in your mouth, forgive me, but you know what I'm talking about, that moment, that aha, yes, that's
sure.
This is sure. Rodney. And the ones that I'm not going to go. I'm so guilty of throwing out the ones that I.
No, go ahead.
No, you go first because that actually, in terms of the chronology, I'd be curious to know that first kernel that came out.
Well, here's a new one that sort of surprised me. It's called "In the Land Before Time." Once upon a time, I was too young for judgment, guile, or woe. I wore Dracula's cape, and I had a friend named Tony, who wore a fireman's cap and held a toy soldier, whose arms he manipulated in the service of an ongoing narrative. The sun shone brightly, and we only knew contentment. Mama stood in the doorway looking outside to make sure that no one was bleeding or missing. I glanced back every now and then to make sure that no one was bruised or crying. Once upon a time, I lived in a land before time, before the ogres and the mood swings, before the sloughs of despond and the melancholy. This photograph must have been taken then.
I love that poem for a number of different reasons. I was the question that came on the first reading was, I understand your mother looking on, but why are you looking back?
The speaker in the poem is implying that, yes, a parent is going to keep their eye on their kids, especially when they're outside, especially nowadays, but the kid is also keeping a watchful eye out on the mother. And the implication is that she could be in danger too, and the implication is domestic violence. So he's making sure that nothing is happening to her too. So it's sort of like bookends in a way, and the way it just sort of mildly and is calmly delivered to the reader, it just makes it interesting. And it's another one of those moments where I go, oh wow, look how that came out, you know.
Wow, that's you really speak to the need. Well, I guess just the enjoyment on so many different levels of a poem, because I could have read that poem five or six times and maybe begun to focus in on that line more and the meaning of that, because it really pivots there, and I didn't realize that on the first reading. But at the same time, you paint such a vivid image, and that time period and the playing with the toy soldier and where you are on the sidewalk, it taps into, I imagine, lots of minds. My own had a very, that image, one of the most important moments in my life came from a session like that, playing with a friend, and my friend Edmund Douglas, Detroit, Michigan, 1968, and playing on a sidewalk, and he was playing with his friend John Jackson, and his mom called him away right in the middle of the fun, and he was gone. They were gone with no warning. Wow. And no goodbye, no just step by, and right in the middle of the heights of this euphoria, and it changed me. Mm-hmm. It was a hugely important moment. But anyway, the show is not about me, but I just find it interesting how you've picked a moment that I think 9 out of 10 people can relate to.
Sure, and what you just said about that moment being gone and that disappearing act, that's kind of how I feel about those childhood days. There's such a rosy gauze in the memory and in your feelings about that. And it's sort of like a distant land that you can't quite get to. You have a memory of, and that's sort of the gist of it.
I think, and I'll be weaving in music that you send me in post production in and out of what we're talking about. But I'm enjoying just diving into another poem or two, if that's all right with you.
Sure.
I read, and if any of these resonate with you, we'll go there. I did, just coincidentally, that was the first title that jumped out. I read In the Land Before Time first. I jumped onto the short, I Rue the Road. My love is fair and proper, awash in bird song. I'm a gardener and an avid listener of bird song. And We Perennials, and then, of course, the title, The Universal Solvent.
Sure.
Any of those would be appropriate it's just something I could speak to, and if none of them are moving you right now, there's
no something I love all of those.
Okay.
I love all those.
Okay. It's funny how I gravitate toward a title in poetry when I get collections, because it's a one-man show, and I had 10 minutes to prep. But which of those I'll make a selfish
Go ahead.
See, that it was all really enjoyable reading. A Wash in Bird Song. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed. There's there's something about birdsong for me personally that locks me into something greater, as it does if I go to the sea, for example, or if I go, I'm on a big river, a big body of water, or something like that. I don't know quite why that is, but you kind of touch on it in this poem.
Sure. I was sitting near Salem College one day, and there was just trees full of birds, and it was so loud and so dominant, and I just thought, wow, it's sort of transporting. It's like water that takes your boat away. And that's how I felt. And the other thing about that is, in this area, there is a bird. So far, I think it's a white-throated sparrow, but it's a do-do-do. That's what its song is like. I hear it all the time.
That descending three-note scale. Yes.
And I've got to talk to an expert about it and see if I can even turn it into a melody for a song. But do you want me to read a wash in bird song?
Let's do. Okay. Yeah.
I'm awash in bird song, tart, evocative, healing. An ambient cocoon.
Could you try that again?
Sure.
Or start from the beginning.
Okay. Uh-huh. I am awash in birdsong, tart, evocative, healing. An ambient cocoon, a sonic shower, a tonal universe, inspiring a poet's theory of everything, general, relative, wavical. A particle matters insofar as its specific song. That is to say, its signature, its note, its tune, its telltale amplitude. While spinning you this way and that, it signifies its place in the biosphere, its clef, its chair in the symphony, its place in the universe, my universe, intentional, good, ample. A place for well-versed poets and birds on the wing and song, resonating, informing, inviting, transforming. Your timpani calibrates my heart's vitality. Your cello tugs at me here like longing looks. Your bird song carries me in astral flight, where, in at one moment, all I hear is many hearts' ecstatic sound. And I do mean that as a poet's theory of everything, how to understand the universe and how it's a field of vibration, different vibrations. Why mystics and Eastern people talk about vibration so much, and listening to the birds put me in mind of all that.
Well, your love of science comes to the fore too, amplitude, particles, and even I think of music theory and treble clefs as being somewhat mathematic and scientific. It's a neat combination, and somehow life reaffirming at the granular level.
Sure, yeah, the science. I love how the science comes through, and I so often am using scientific terminology to describe emotional context, and I was noticing that about my poem, and I was saying, I guess science is a big part of my poetics, and then I discovered a Mexican poet named Coral Bracho, and she really does that. Hers is very geological. Mine is often astronomical. Hers is very geological. And her poetry has things like the mossy designs and your gravid this. And I read one of her poems in Spanish and English, and I felt like I was in a trance. And the trance did not resolve till I had written a tribute poem similar to hers called The Fount, which is eerie, creepy, good, you know. So poetry can do that. Put you in a trance until something resolves itself and comes out.
I think closer to home here on the Away campus, I think of A.R. Ammons and his love of science and how it worked its way in so many of his poems, his massive tombs. I've asked my selfish questions. I want to get into specifics on an event. Is there a Delta event that this is coming up? What's on the horizon here?
One thing that's coming up at Delta, which is a little bit different, just their annual Mother's Day jazz brunch on Mother's Day. 12:30. I might be doing sort of a Mother's Day poem. And one thing about this book, I knew I had one or two poems that were sort of a tribute to my grandmother. I just didn't know that her spirit pervaded it so much. And I will probably be doing, before the jazz performer performs and before the food is served, or as the food is being served, a poem in tribute to mothers. And one such poem was actually read yesterday at the Delta Center, one of my other poems. So that was good to hear people appreciating that.
Perfect. Well, will you have books there for people to pick up if they arrive?
Definitely the books. My book's already on sale at Delta Art Center and a few other places in town.
Great. Well, that'll be – that's all I need. I just needed an event to – you know, that the –
Sure.
And then otherwise, we can make this an evergreen and –